The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.
As the FIFA Women's World Cup gears up for an exciting final matchup, get the best coverage with Sports Like a Boss on Podcast One Sportsnet. Join three-time Olympian Holly McPeak and sports broadcaster Anne-Marie Anderson as they analyze the biggest stories and scandals with some amazing guests. Go for the gold and download new episodes of Sports Like a Boss every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One Sportsnet. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed, no sign up. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. Hey everyone, True Car has been a proud supporter of the PFF NFL show for years, and we want to partner with them to hear all about your True Car experience. And you may even get an Amazon gift card to kick off your summer. We want to hear all about your True Car shopping experience, so send us an email to truecar@podcastone.com and tell us all about your shopping experience with True Car. The first 200 people to email will receive a $20 Amazon gift card. So you have to send in your email soon. We can't wait to hear from you. All right, welcome into the PFF NFL show. I am back from vacation. Sam Monson here with Mike Renner, because Steve is now on vacation. Mm-hmm. We've teamed this up nicely so that we don't abandon you entirely all at once. But yeah, I'm back from my couple of weeks. Mike, how are things in my absence?
Things are going well. There's no NFL news to speak of, though.
Nothing. Yeah, I came back.
Yeah, you came back. And I was like, what do we do? Nothing's actually happened.
Came back after 2 weeks out in the desert. And as far as I can tell, nothing has happened in the NFL landscape over those 2 weeks.
Unless you count 40 yards of gold.
Yes.
As being something that happened, which it did end up happening. I'm not sure anyone watched it, but...
Well, it was on pay-per-view. The most interesting thing... So this whole thing started, if you don't know, because Ted Ginn... I don't even know where he was when he did this, but Ted Ginn basically challenged anybody to race him for $10,000. He said he'd take on anybody for $10,000. So they created this whole like sprint bracket out of fast NFL guys to basically prove who the fastest guy in the NFL was. And Ted Ginn was in it. There was a whole bunch of other guys, Robbie Anderson, Marquise Goodwin. Ted Ginn ended up not showing up to the thing, which I haven't seen the reason for that. But in what is probably not a surprise to anybody, Marquise Goodwin, the Olympic sprinter, won.
Yes. And the thing was how ridiculously set up the bracket was in terms of they needed like star power. So you get someone like Alvin Kamara who runs in like the 4.5s to get in there. And it's like they probably paid him to get in there to like promote the event. But then it was absurd because he's not going to have a chance against guys like Marquise Goodwin, guys like, you know, actual track guys in college running, you know, who know how to start. And that was such a big thing of this. It's not, it wasn't just you get to do your own start and go.
Yeah.
It's a gun. It's basically a track event.
I think it was, they use blocks, right? I don't think it was a, like a 40, you know, like a combine style thing where you just line up in your stance and go. I think they use sprinter blocks because I think the times were like, you know, 4.1s. They weren't like, you know, 4.3.
I'll be honest, speeds. I didn't pay for the event, so
no, I haven't seen
watched,
it.
But someone filming on their camera or on their phone.
I thought I saw the times that were listed, and they were, you know, 4.1s. And I'm going to assume that rather than people just
breaking the record,
just becoming faster than anybody's ever run a combine 40, they were using sprinter blocks to start. So Kamara got smoked by Robbie Anderson, who then didn't take part anymore. What was maybe the most interesting one was two guys, I think. Dante Jackson made the final and lost to Marquise Goodwin. Like, Jackson's fast. I think we all knew that anyway. He was like, what, 4.3 flat at the combine? But to be able to give an Olympic sprinter a pretty good race over 40 yards is kind of impressive. And the other guy was John Franklin III, the former Auburn quarterback, now Chicago Bears corner.
Secondary.
Defensive back somewhere.
Probably not going to make roster.
Right. He's fast.
Yeah.
Like, he only just lost out to Dante Jackson. It was like 0.01 seconds. And he beat somebody else in his first round thing.
Which really makes you wonder, though, how bad did he have to be at throwing a football to not be able to see the field just with how electric, you know, he is athletically.
If he can throw it at all. The other guy that was worth mentioning is Rashad Robinson, former 49ers cornerback. He starts like you do because his race was against John Franklin.
I'm not good at starting.
No.
That's not a good thing. Yeah. That's what we're trying to say.
Yes. If you look at Mike Renner's 40 time on our YouTube video.
Please don't.
It didn't go well for you, Mike. But it was all in your start. Like, once you were going, you know, you were moving. It's just that you lost countless amounts of time in your start. Rashad Robinson would have had the guy if it was like a 50-yard dash.
He looked too long. Yeah. Long for that start.
But 40 yards, he didn't start well. Didn't start well. Mm-hmm. Which actually matches up quite well with his tape because it's all recovery speed. His recovery speed is absurd, but that's usually because he got smoked somewhere at the line, which is not ideal.
But $1 million to the winner, Marquise Goodwin. Yeah. Congratulations. Where are they going to get that $1 million from?
I don't know where they got the $1 million from, but that's a pretty good deal for Marquise Goodwin. You show up as the guy that's the Olympic sprinter, what presumably should have been the prohibitive favorite. I don't actually know what the odds look like. But yeah, you roll in there, you beat the guys you should have beaten, and you get out of there with $1 million.
At $40 a pop, you need 25,000 people to have bought your pay-per-view, and I don't think I've even seen a clip of like an actual someone buying pay-per-view and then putting it on Twitter.
Well,
like,
that's assuming there's no costs associated as well. So plus there were prize money for like second and, you know, winning the other rounds. So yeah, I don't know where they got the $1 million from.
I'd like to see, instead of 40 yards goal with fastest, do it with like offensive linemen or a different position where we know the fastest guys are never the best football players. It seems like there are always track guys who get pushed into football because they're fast enough and don't have any sort of football skills. I want to see the guys who actually somehow have football skills at maybe a different position, like I said, offensive line.
So
get that going.
Chad Ochocinco / Johnson / whatever he goes by these days. He was the host of this thing, and he was saying, you know, next year it's going to be bigger and better. We can improve this, Mike. Not only do I like that idea, what I want to see happen is, like they do in the combine with the simulcast thing, where they give guys head starts.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll get the offensive linemen in there.
30 yards.
But we'll have them start at the 30.
Yeah.
And see if Marquise Goodwin can chase them down by the end of 40 yards. This is beautiful. You get each position group. You just figure out what kind of head start they deserve. You know, offensive linemen, quarterbacks. This is beautiful. I like this. This is good.
That would be bigger and also probably better. I think it'd be more interesting. But yeah.
Marquise Goodwin chasing down, you know, Jason Kelce over his 30-yard dash. I think that's how this thing becomes huge next year. So yeah, that was the only thing that happened in the NFL over the last 2 weeks.
And that's hardly hardly, it's more track event than football event, to be
honest.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how you know it is June in the NFL. It's everybody's on vacation. Nothing is happening. But let's talk about something that you put up on the site, Mike. It's underrated players, which is always a good off-season topic.
Great off-season topic.
To hit on.
And it's something that we at PFF, I feel like, have sort of tried to unearth or been better at unearthing over the course of our career, you know, over decade plus of doing this, because you'll see guys who, you know, consistently grade well, or if up and coming guys who have graded well and just haven't gotten their dues, so that sort of thing. I think we're good at identifying those players, cutting through the BS and the hype.
Yeah, it's the beauty of the system, right? Mm-hmm. Once you're actually recording and taking down everything, every play on every, or action on every single play, you get a better idea of being able to quantify guys, as opposed to just sort of working from, you know, box score numbers or highlight reels or just what you remember from the game. When you start quantifying it all, you start to be able to point to these guys that don't necessarily have the highlight plays or don't necessarily have the stats, but are playing at as high a level as some of the people that do.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you want to hit? Who do you want to talk about from your list?
Well, let's just go position by position and kind of throw through who I put, and then who else we know, we else think is up there as well.
All right, the quarterback is interesting because it's a position that everybody, you know, feels they have a great handle on anyway, but also because the player that you've gone for, I think, is one of the more polarizing quarterbacks in the NFL. You've gone with Russell Wilson from the Seahawks.
And I think it's because I have, what gets underrated about him is the way his legs impact opposing defenses. Why everyone points to, they run the ball so much over the course of his career. They've always had a great defense, great running game, but they don't realize that he has been a massive, massive driver in the fact that they have a great running game. They used option runs more than any other team in the NFL last year. The Seahawks did. That is why they had one of the best run games in the NFL. That's why they averaged 4.8 yards per carry, is because on option runs, they averaged 4.8 yards per carry. On all other run concepts, they averaged 4.3 yards per carry, and then his scrambling brought up their yards per carry as a team as well. So he is a big driver in that, and when he does pass, one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL, even though he doesn't pass a lot.
Right, and the thing that's different about him when it comes to what he does on the ground in the run game is he's able to do it essentially without exposing himself to hits.
Yes.
Like, it's not. So the biggest concern for decades with quarterbacks, and why the NFL always stayed away from those college style option quarterbacks, is, well, you can't expose your quarterback to those kind of hits because they're going to get hurt, and then you're screwed because you don't have a quarterback. It doesn't matter anymore. So then the NFL started to go away from that, and you started to go, well, okay, it's worth the risk now. So you get Cam Newtons, you get Lamar Jacksons, you get, you know, even a Carson Wentz. You get these guys that are so dangerous with their legs and so dynamic as athletes that it's worth risking them to take advantage of what they can do. But almost all of those guys take hits, and they get exposed to injury because of it. Cam Newton in particular, even though he's huge and, you know, a monster in the run game, it's breaking him down. But Russell Wilson is able to do that, and he may be the best quarterback in all of football at avoiding taking hits. He will get what's there, and then he'll hit the ground.
And that is a big part of, so certain option runs with the quarterback, just the normal read option, you are out in space, and sort of you can see the hit coming and then protect yourself. You can slide, get down, that sort of thing. A lot of stuff to do with Cam Newton, they're running him between the tackles, using him as a battering ram. You're not as protected there. That's a little different than how they use Russell Wilson, but that is a big thing to it. You're not, when you are in the pocket, stepping up into throws a lot of times, some of those pocket passers are going to be more injury prone because you're not being able to protect yourself. Wilson moves like a running back, has the speed of a running back, so he can, when he gets out into space, protect himself and get himself into favorable situations where he's not taking the big shots. And he has, I mean, has been the pinnacle of health over the course of his career.
Yeah, it's definitely not, you know, like for like comparing him with Cam Newton and what Cam Newton is asked to do by the Panthers.
Yeah.
But Wilson is also exceptionally good at understanding. He's got a really good feel for when I can make a guy miss versus when I'm going to get hit. I need to hit the ground. So, you know, he'll see him juke guys out of their shoes. Whereas, it's a one-on-one shot. The guy's got a pretty good chance of making a hit on him, but he knows I can make this guy miss. versus no, this one's actually going to make a hit. I gotta hit the ground.
Yeah, definitely something for Kyler Murray to be watching. Wilson's tape on how to protect himself there, because they're very similar athletes in that regard.
And he's also one of the more fascinating quarterbacks, because kind of like Aaron Rodgers, you have this thing. Anybody that does things in a different way to everybody else, you know, a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, it's pretty easy to see the dynamic at work. They stay in the pocket. They don't do an awful lot. There's not that much to work with. It's just sort of how much pressure is coming versus what you could do to mitigate it. But with an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson, they play the game in a slightly different way that changes how all of that stuff works. So for years, you've had this idea of the Seahawks offensive line has been terrible, puts Russell Wilson under a ton of pressure. But then Wilson also causes a lot of that pressure himself.
Yes.
And I think because he is a short quarterback, he will deliberately start to move around back there to essentially manufacture himself some windows, throwing lanes to be able to see downfield. And you get these situations where it would be a clean pocket, but he wants to start shifting people around, starts to run around, find some space back there, and then ultimately makes a pass off the back of that vision. But anybody that I think has that different dynamic at work, it causes sort of it polarizes people, right? Because some people are going to see that as a bad thing, some people are going to see it as a good thing, and it's just this interesting discussion point with him versus other quarterbacks.
Yeah, it very much goes back to that. If you guys have ever read Andy Benoit, his sort of dichotomy or his contradiction that he was having to face with Russell Wilson, why he was so down on Russell Wilson. But he was like, if I'm a defense coordinator, I would hate to face Russell Wilson because there's no game plan for some of the stuff that he does. I think that's where offensive coordinators and a lot of times quarterbacks like him have gotten pushed on boards in the past. I think are coming around to that style of quarterback is that because they can't control that. You want, as an offensive coordinator, you want to be able to control it. You want them to go to A to B, run their offense. Russell Wilson, that's not going to be him, but you live with it because he's so darn good at making plays. And I mean, it's just been so consistent over the course of his career, his grading profile, that at this point, if you're still not on board with Russell Wilson being one of those, 6 to 8 quarterbacks that legitimately will give you a good offense every single year, no matter what's around him, you're never going to be on board with them.
He's also got a pretty spectacular deep ball. Mm-hmm. He's got that kind of Dante Culpepper style of pass where it just drops in. Yeah, the rainbow drops into the bucket at the end of it all to Tyler Lockett. He's got this stable of receivers. Typically, they're not the sort of 6'5" guys that are winning jump balls. They're just catching these beautiful rainbow targets deep down the field. What else we got? We got running back, James White, the Patriots.
James White. And so this one, the Patriots get, like the running backs for the Patriots get sort of, every year, they're interchangeable. The Patriots running backs, right. They're just a cog in the system. And to some degree, that's running backs just as a whole. But James White, there's a reason why he's, been there for 5+ years now, almost six. This will be his sixth year in the NFL, and they haven't signed through 2021 is because his receiving ability, what that brings to the table, is just changes how opposing defenses, what they can do to opposing defenses. They can go from this big, heavy formation with two tight ends, a fullback, and James White to then 5 guys spread out wide the very next play in a no-huddle offense and just create mismatches. 87 catches last year, 751 yards. He's, half wide receiver, half running back. And I think that's where guys can really bring value to the table at running back. Everyone looks at him as this replaceable sort of cog in the system. No, he can run legitimate wide receiver routes and actually catch passes out of the backfield at a high level.
I think any Patriots running back is probably going to end up being underrated because of the way the Patriots do that, they sort of break down the backfield by roles. I need a receiving back. I need a power back. I need, they have all those different types of running backs and they sort of split up the time between them depending on what the game plan is. Consequently, it's like, well, this guy can only do that. Mm-hmm. Whereas James White can run the ball. He can run the ball between the tackles. He can run wide. He can catch it out of the backfield. He is a really good running back, but people see him as just the receiving back there in New England, whereas someone else.
Whereas like just a receiving back is also kind
right,
of what
it's
you
also
want.
The most important thing. Yeah,
exactly.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think James White, we've seen before in big games that he is a really talented player and the guy they lean on at times, Super Bowls.
Exactly.
He's been the guy that's carrying that team at times. What about wide receiver? Tyler Lockett, the recipient of the Russell Wilson
rainbow. So for a similar reason in that they don't pass in Seattle. Obviously, in the Brian Schottenheimer offense, they have been the most run-heavy team in the NFL. But Tyler Lockett, on a snap basis, on an efficiency basis, far more efficient than a lot of other receivers, a lot of other bigger names around the NFL, even though he didn't have 1,000 yards, had a perfect passer rating when targeted this past season and averaged more yards per route than Adam Thielen, Juju Smith-Schuster, that's a mouthful, Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Antonio Brown, Stephon Diggs, a lot of bigger names. He was more efficient on a per-play basis. Top five last year in deep receiving yardage. There's one of the best route runners in the NFL. Tyler Lockett, if he was in an offense like Pittsburgh, like a high volume offense like the Packers, even he would be a lot bigger of a name.
Tyler Lockett is one of those players that I regret so much that we just didn't have the confidence
to really get on board with,
to really push him that first year. It was the very first year we'd done college grading. Tyler Lockett's grading was every bit as good as Amari Cooper's.
Yes.
Really, those are the two guys that had the best grades. It was Amari Cooper and Tyler Lockett. And Lockett's problem was just size. He was like 5'10", 175, or whatever it was. Tiny guy. And you watch the tape, and it didn't matter. He was making contested catches. He was winning jump balls. He was getting wide open, which is, the thing that is most important these days. Him and Amari Cooper were the two guys that did that the best. And it looked like this stacked wide receiver class. You had Cooper, you had Kevin White, you had Dorial Green-Beckham, you had Funchess. You had all these big receivers, even guys like Nelson Aguilar, significantly bigger. You had this what looked like a loaded first round of wide receiver talent. And then you had Tyler Lockett, whose grade said he should be a first rounder along with them. And I think because he was just so small, we kind of shied away a little bit.
And also in an offense that really does not produce a lot of passing. It is a run-heavy offense there at Kansas State, has been for years, never really produced any high-volume wide receivers, and he produced a ton in that offense still.
So he's really, he's been the same guy essentially in the NFL as he was in college. And the grading pointed us in that direction. We just didn't quite have the confidence to push it the way we should have. If we had that time to do over again, I would love to be out there saying Tyler Lockett is right up there with Amari Cooper is, the best wide receiver in this class.
Obviously. Yeah.
But that's one of my lasting regrets, Mike.
We have a lot of those. Hopefully not as many going forward, though.
It's, now that it was year one of the system.
That is true.
We didn't know what it meant. This is the first year we had NFL or PFF grades on these NFL prospects. We didn't know how much stock to put in that. This guy's got a fantastic grade, but we know that physical ability and size and speed and all that kind of stuff, it matters to some degree. We just didn't know how much and where to put that. So it was all a learning experience. What about tight end? We got one more offensive weapon, Gerald Everett.
Gerald Everett, Los Angeles Rams tight end. Get to know the name. Perfect for that Sean McVay offense in that they don't use the tight ends a lot to block in line. He's more of an H-back, 6'2", 240-ish range. And they use him to come across formation and basically cut the backside end a ton. He can do that, does that very well. He's a very willing blocker in that regard, willing blocker out in space. And then after the catch is where he actually separates himself. Five broken tackles this year and only 33 catches. One of the best broken tackle rates among all tight ends. Actually trailed only George Kittle, Vance McDonald, and David Njoku last year. So he's great after the catch. Good hands. Only played 503 snaps. So his raw totals aren't going to look great. But with more volume in that offense, I think Gerald Everett is a name to know going forward.
Yeah, I'd love to see him with a kind of massively expanded role in that system and see what he can do with a sort of full-time workload, particularly as that offense develops this year, because it's going to need to create some additional wrinkles. It's going to need to find a plan B after last year. I think that's the big thing for that system generally is we started to see last year that, there have been systems in the NFL before that have come in, taken the league by storm year one, and then stalled because they didn't change, right? It was, this is the system. And eventually NFL teams figure it out. And once they take away plan A, you need to either evolve or you need to have a suitable plan B to take advantage of what they're trying to take away. So I think last year we started to see towards the end, teams start to take away what it is the Rams want to do. And plan B, it never really looked like it existed, let alone was effective. So I think this is a big year. And obviously, Plan A was so devastating that everybody goes out and hires a Sean McVay disciple. Now half the league is stocked with this offense. If it doesn't have Plan B, or if they're not able to evolve it, like half the league just made a pretty bad decision.
I think there is still, it is sound offensive principles the way they go about calling a game in terms of, you know, the bunch formations, the outside zone heavy and the play action heavy scheme. Those things are sound principles that are going to work everywhere. Now, I think there are things you can do to counteract a lot of the things you do in the pass game with those tight splits, with the trips and bunch formations. But a lot of it still will just work and is good sound football, and that's why it's trending that way. That's why you see the proliferation of their offensive minds and their offensive guys who know that system.
Your offensive line has a player in it that I'm a huge fan of this selection because we did we took over Peter King's Football Morning in America. My section was writing about guys that either could be on our PFF 50 list or will be higher. And David Bakhtiari made our David Bakhtiari featured in our 10 things I think at the end. And I think I labeled him as the most underrated player in all of football.
You did, in fact.
Yeah, because if you... one of the things I pulled out was using, I think, the last 3 years or the last 5 years of pass blocking grading for offensive linemen. And he was number one by a distance, right? Mm-hmm. He was way out at the top. But number two was Joe Thomas. So everyone... Joe Thomas has been the gold standard of pass blocking left tackles basically since he's entered the league right up until his retirement. But actually, over the past couple of years, Bakhtiari had kind of overtaken him anyway. Even before Thomas was forced to retire, Bakhtiari had become that standard. Probably doesn't get the recognition because, you know, he wasn't the first round stud, you know, prospect from get-go.
And even not being a first rounder, even just the way he looked, he's not physically dominant. You know, he's 6'4". He's 300 pounds. He's barely, he doesn't look like Tyron Smith. He doesn't have these ridiculously long arms. He doesn't look like Joe Thomas. He's not enormous. He's just an average looking offensive lineman who does not lose in pass blocking, just rarely, if ever, loses throughout the course of games. And like you said, has been the best over the last 4 years. And the craziest thing to me is, so he has, it was the first team All-Pro this past year. So he's not underrated by everyone and has had two second team All-Pros, but has never been to a Pro Bowl, which shows you kind of the ridiculousness of both those systems.
Well, yeah, the ridiculousness of the system and also who he's underrated by.
Yes.
You know, like the All-Pro
general
public recognizes that this is a really good player. It's also possible to be a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro and still be underrated. You know, like his grading right now is suggesting that he's on track for Joe Thomas style career, at least when it comes to pass protection. And that's Hall of Fame level. And I don't think, even with all pros to his name, nobody is currently thinking of David Bakhtiari as a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I was actually we'll get to interior defensive line a little later, but I was debating Fletcher Cox for that one as being underrated because I don't think people realize the difference between, well, one, Aaron Donald's out in his own sort of stratosphere is why Fletcher Cox gets underrated, because if Aaron Donald didn't exist, people would be talking about Fletcher Cox kind of the way we talk about Aaron Donald, in that he's just in his own stratosphere playing on the interior defensive lines way better than any other defense tackle in the NFL.
There might be few things more frustrating to a person than being clearly the second best person like in your era.
Yeah,
I've seen it like across sports.
To be fair, I'd take that, but
it's better than just, you know, being bad. But it must drive you nuts. Like, you know, people forget that how good Dante Culpepper's 2004 season was because it happened at the same time as arguably the best season of Peyton Manning's career. So you don't even, it's like it didn't exist.
Exactly.
And the one that I always come back to with this stuff is, you know anything about motorcycle racing, Mike?
God, I do not.
It's a guy called Valentino Rossi, who's basically the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Incredible. He's had this like 20-year career from like teenager to like 40s. But for a spell, like a regular period of his career, there was a guy called Max Biaggi, who was clearly the second best rider the entire time, right? He'd been the best all the way through the sort of the setups, like the lower sequences, the leagues, got to the top. Then Rossi came along. It's like, now you're just worse than him.
Yeah.
But he would spend every race, and it was Rossi almost like toyed with him. So he would be like second. He would trail him behind for like 25 laps, and then the last lap just overtake him and win. And you could tell that it like gnawed at Biaggi's very existence to be like, there's nothing I can do. This guy is just better than I am, and yet I am better than everybody else in the world. That's Fletcher Cox.
Yeah.
Like, he is better than any other defensive interior lineman in the NFL, but you're just you're not in Aaron Donald's stratosphere, and there's nothing you can do to get there because he's so far off the end compared to everybody else. But yeah, so it's a great point that Fletcher Cox gets completely screwed by that, even though he's recognized as being, you know, Pro Bowl, All-Pro, dominant player. People don't appreciate how good.
Well, that's what makes his list tough to sort of assemble. It's like, you get a lot of blowback. Oh, he's not underrated. He's X. It's like, underrated is kind of it's a very relative term, and it's what you're comparing the rating system, who's rating them that we're comparing it to.
One guy really I want to touch on that I really like that you've highlighted is Olivier Vernon. Who kind of the same story, right? He's rated by some.
The perception, quickly it went back and forth on him. It went from, oh, this breakout year in Miami, he's the top edge on the market, and then he gets fastly overpaid. He was never going to live up to that, you know, 5-year, $85 million contract. And then once he doesn't live up to it, oh, he's a bum.
Yeah.
No, he was actually playing pretty well, had some injuries this past season, and still played when he got on the field at an extremely high level. Will be a massive, massive upgrade for the Cleveland Browns this year, but he just wasn't worth $5-year, $85 million contract.
There's two things I think that really work against people in terms of their perception. It's what the contract you got handed was and where you were drafted. So if you're drafted and you don't become the sort of perennial all-pro that people expected you to become, if you're just a good player, you'll be seen as a bust. You know, like even though so you can get massively underrated by the fact that people think you suck and you don't, you're just not, you know, the future Hall of Famer that everybody thought you were going to be. And then the other one is the Olivier Vernons, the Ndamukong Suhs. If you get a monster free agent contract that you just never had a shot of living up to, you're going to be seen as a bum, even though you're actually a really good player. You're just potentially not justifying that contract.
Yeah, like Eric Fisher just never should have gone number one overall.
Yeah.
Like if you drafted him 25th overall, you would have been like,
ecstatic.
That's awesome. Like that gets, you know, that was a good pick.
Yeah.
And he's a solid left tackle in the NFL. If you draft that 25th overall, it's a good pick. Drafting at number one overall, expectations are going to be different.
The other point you made, I think, originally about Olivier Vernon is that he may have had the hardest job of any pass rusher in football at that division, going up against NFC East tackles.
For the last, Trent Williams, Tyron Smith,
right,
and Jason Peters.
I mean, you're dealing three of the best five left tackles in the NFL counts for six of your games.
Yeah. I mean, compare that to a lot of other divisions around the NFL, and you're not going to get anywhere near that sort of difficulty.
There are pass rushers that won't face an all-pro tackle of that caliber all season, and Vernon's doing it six games a year. So, yeah, that alone should account for a pretty big bump in his production this year going to Cleveland, where he's going to be going up against AFC North right tackles as opposed to NFC East left tackles.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm a big fan of that pick. Who's your who's the other guy you wanted to highlight on the defensive line?
I think David Onyemata. Now, he just got suspended for a game for marijuana possession, but if you look at the numbers on him, it's pretty staggering how good he's been for the Saints this past season. From week 5 on, he had an 89.1 overall grade. And the crazy thing about him is just how much better he's gotten year on year. Every single year, went from a 57.2 grade as a rookie, 71.6 in year two, 81.2 this past season, came out of University of Manitoba, you know, back all the way back in 2016.
Powerhouse.
Only 26 years old. I think there's a good reason to think of he could join that sort of second tier that, you know, the Kwon Short, Mike Daniels, Akeem Hicks of defensive tackles that are very, very good, very, very impactful. And that'll be huge for the New Orleans Saints here down the stretch. Could be the makings of one of the best defense lines in the NFL.
Nice. Let's hit one more player on this and then we'll jump to some college stuff.
Because
I know you're the college guy now, Mike. Cornerback, you've gone with Darius Slay. Corner is fascinating because there's no, you know, Darrell Revis anymore. Mm-hmm. It's this kind of weird landscape where I don't know that.
And even like Sherman was probably like the guy for a while, has definitely taken a slip and play. Patrick Peterson, they played a lot of zone last year, did not suit him to his best to have his best, you know, sort of season. So it's kind of up for grabs,
yeah,
the sort of title at that position.
And I think there's so many different ways of kind of looking at it, like what you want the corner to do. A, you know, scheme varies so wildly, whether you're playing a zone-heavy system or man-heavy system. But B, you know, what do you value as more important? Sort of limiting the amount of catches a guy has, the plays on the ball. Do you want your guy getting interceptions, pass breakups, all that kind of stuff? So there's a ton of different ways you can look at cornerback to kind of decide how well people are playing. But give me the case for Darius Slay.
Two big things. One is just he's been incredibly consistent. Over the past four seasons, never been below 77.0 overall grade. So I think four straight years he's been that's top 25-ish, top 20, 25 level of play at the cornerback position.
Which
we see
consistent.
Yeah, which we see is like rarely, if you're not one of the top 3 to 5 cornerbacks in the NFL, it's rare that you don't have a down year at the cornerback position, just because it's so tough to guard NFL receivers. You're going to get beat a handful of times deep, and all that, you know, get beat four times deep in a season, that's all of a sudden a bad season. Yeah. That's how fickle the cornerback position is. Over that four-year span, 90.5 overall coverage grade over that span. And so I just don't think his name gets tossed around in terms of the top 10 cornerbacks in the NFL, but he does all that, and he tracks number one wide receivers. Did it, I think, 10 times this past season, had games where he tracked number one wide receiver. So tracking number ones, has all that, all the stats to go along with it. I think his name deserves to be mentioned in that sort of top 10. I'm not putting him as the number one cornerback in the NFL, not saying that at all, but I think he just gets underrated because Lions defense kind of stinks, but he's been sort of carrying them on a bad defense for years now.
And another guy who's now got a pretty tough job in that division.
Yes.
Because you're going up against Vikings receivers, you're going up against Davante Adams.
And Davante Adams, really, like, that's when last year when I really knew Davante Adams was going to have a breakout year, because he made Darius Slay look awful. And no one has made Darius Slay kind of look like that over the course of his career.
So let's pivot from NFL cornerbacks to college cornerbacks.
Yes.
You're now PFF's, what's your title, like, your official?
Lead draft analyst.
Lead draft analyst. So Mike is like 24/7 draft. You're diving into all the college prospects.
Yes.
Constantly. You're the guy that actually knows who the hell these people are before we roll around the draft season.
As
opposed to me, who will roll into draft season and then try and figure out who they are. So who should we be paying attention to with the cornerbacks?
Top of the class, three names I'll give you that I think I feel comfortable throwing first round sort of mix right at the moment. Bryce Hall out of Virginia. I think if he came out this past year, would have been the first cornerback taken, because he has the size, the speed, he has all the measurables, has the ball production. He had the second highest coverage grade in all of college football last year. Has the highest coverage grade of anyone in this class over the past two seasons. Ton of ball production, and he has just absurdly long wingspan. When you look at him, he just envelops wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. Going to be a press Seattle cover three teams are going to fall in love with this guy. Probably going to have a top 10 grade on him coming out because of what he can do in terms of just shutting down one side of the field. If he's playing in a silo, he is so good at that. He's not going to be your move him around, follow wide receivers to the slot sort of guy, but if you run one of those schemes, you run a man heavy scheme, he's going to be your guy. He has all those sort of traits. I can't believe he didn't come out, to be honest, with the tape we saw from him last year. I'm just very surprised. Definitely in the mix there for the first corner off the board.
Okay, I like it. Who else we got?
Christian Fulton out of LSU. For my money, after having watched both of them, the better LSU cornerback last year. He played better last year than Greedy Williams. I think he's just a smoother athlete. Or not even I think. He is a smoother athlete than Greedy Williams. Is a more scheme-diverse cornerback than Greedy was, for sure. Just in hip pockets down the field again and again. I think he has a very good chance to leap Bryce Hall and be the first cornerback off the board. I think he's that talented.
Wow.
Now, he probably didn't come out because he got suspended for 2 years for cheating on a drug test.
Whew.
And so it ended up getting chopped down to 1 year. And so this was actually really, last year was only his first year really playing college football. And so I think he had one more year to sort of get that way in the rear view mirror.
A little bit.
And now he'll be, if he gets 2 years on tape of high-level production, I could see him going in the top 10. The last guy, also in the SEC, C.J. Henderson. He's not quite as athletically gifted as maybe Hall or Fulton are, but he is so patient. He rarely gives up anything down this field, despite a lack of probably high-end athleticism. I love his feet at the line of scrimmage and breaking on passes. so good at that. I think he's firmly in the first round mix as well. Those three are the guys I feel comfortable at the top of this class.
Nice. The Fulton thing is interesting because it's one thing to be sort of better than a teammate that came out a year ago. But when that guy was a first round pick, you know, when that guy's a high level draft pick,
should have been first round.
Should have been first round talent.
Yes.
You know, when a guy is that good that you're supposedly better than, it puts you in a pretty rare air. It doesn't necessarily mean it'll translate because, you know, either the first round talent like Greedy slips further down the draft or the draft that you come out in is better or worse. So it's not always like for like, but it kind of it puts you in some very rare air right off the
Yeah, point. I remember Steve and I were doing something about cornerbacks last year. And this was after the deadline for people having declared. And I just had assumed that Fulton was going to declare with how good I'd watched his tape. And I was like, oh, okay, I assume he's just going to be in this draft with how well he played. No, he came back. So that's why I see him as top of this class. There's a few guys, though, that have also been getting hype who I just need to see more from at this point. One, Shaheem Carter out of Alabama. Big reason why is because he's playing that slot safety hybrid role in Alabama's defense. He's not playing on the outside. Anytime you're in that, you're probably projecting more two slot or two safety.
The Minka Fitzpatrick role.
Yeah, Minka Fitzpatrick role. You're probably projecting more two safety at the next level. And so unless he kicks out to boundary, you know, to the edge cornerback position, you're just going to have a tough time. It's such a different role that I'm going to have a tough time projecting you there. But I liked a lot I saw from him. I don't see necessarily a fantastic athlete. I think he might actually be better at safety, so that's probably where I'd evaluate him at this point. But a lot of people have him at corner. And then Paulson Adebo out of Stanford, he's just – I don't think he has the top-end speed to hold up at cornerback position in the NFL, but similar to Bryce Hall in that he's extremely physical, extremely long. Tack comes up, wants to hit, so maybe more zone-heavy teams, cover two teams, or – that sort of thing would covet Debo's skill set.
The Carter thing is interesting because it feels like the NFL should start trending towards essentially adopting that position.
Yes,
anyway.
That should be a position.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've done the George and Eric and the forecast guys have done research on this idea that players that have experience covering the slot are the ones that translate better to covering the slot in the NFL. You know, you're better off getting a guy that's good covering the slot in college than just assuming somebody who played outside or safety or something in college can immediately move to the slot and be good because it's a, you know, it's obviously a different position.
And it is like, it is so different in terms of what you want to covet at that. So outside cornerback speed is so much, so important in terms of if you just lose a step to a fast wide receiver on the outside, you can't regain that
speed
step.
Speed and length.
Yeah, and you're not facing, if you're facing a slot go route, basically a seam route, you're probably not having to carry that if you're the slot cornerback. You're probably passing it off
most
to a safety.
Of the time,
you're not, that speed that, you know, being able to turn and run is not going to be as important. You just have to be able to react, pass off routes. That stuff is more important. So it really is two different sort of skill sets. And if you're already good at one, probably just keep them there.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's two completely different positions. And if anything, it's becoming more different as the league sort of trends in this direction.
And also, you don't need guys to do both. You can keep a guy there all game long and not ask me to do anything else.
Yeah. So now it feels like those guys, instead of, you know, looking at them and saying, well, I don't know if I can project him to the outside or if he needs to move to safety. Like, the league probably needs to start sort of valuing that as a highly coveted position in and of itself, not just where you get guys later on and fill that spot. It's like, no, if this guy is a first round talent doing this, let's not project that to a different position. Let's leave that as a first round talent as a dedicated sort of slot safety hybrid.
Yeah, and I think we've seen Justin Coleman, Taven Young get real contracts playing a role.
Yeah. So free agency is kind of getting there. You know, these guys are now getting paid significant money. I think it's time for the draft to kind of catch up. And all too often, if you see a guy like that, it's, well, how does Minka Fitzpatrick, is he a first round safety or first round corner? It's like, well, or is he like a first round thing that he already is?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So that those guys are interesting to see if the league's going to start sort of coveting that as a first round prospect in and of itself without trying to project them somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Who else do you want to talk about?
All right, I got a few breakout candidates for you at the cornerback position, guys who I like a lot, and I think if they, you know, there's some stuff on tape I'd like to see, or things I'd like to see them improve, or just other roles that I want to see them fill. Darnay Holmes out of UCLA is going to legitimately run in the low 4.3s. He has absurd speed, some absurd playmaking ability, has had a rep against Marquise Brown where he picked him off, ran stride for stride down tape, and that stride for stride down the field, turned, located the ball better than Brown did, and picked it off. Ran a slant route for N'Keal Harry against Arizona State, picked it off for a pick six. So has some high level, also some low level. Dylan Mitchell out of Oregon just murdered him in that matchup on some double moves down the field. He looked lost. So
everybody in college football gets hosed on double moves.
But he just looked lost in other routes as well throughout that game. So he cleaned that up, but he's a high level athlete. Has, like I said, the high level plays on tape. Could be, if he just, you know, works on some things, gets there, could be a first rounder. And a name I want to throw out, Jeff Gladney out of TCU, one of our highest graded corners. Very thin at the moment. I think he's like, looks like he's 6'1 or so, but looks about 170. Very thin. Gets manhandled by some bigger receivers, but has the length and has great feel for zone coverage. And I love his bounce for a taller cornerback. A lot of tall cornerbacks, you know, need to be in press and need to need a limited route tree. Yeah. They need that sort of silo to be able to guard. I think he could move to the slot even with how good his feet are and how good his balance is. So Jeff Gladney, I expect a big year out of him, TCU cornerback. And also Javaris Davis out of Auburn. He actually played the slot role for them a lot. Last year was their nickel corner, and now he's moving to the outside. So that's a big thing for him. Great ruler of the well in the slot. Liked what I saw there. Now can he hold up on the outside, undersized? But if he can, he'll be moving up boards.
The pipeline that some of these college programs have, just being able to produce a draft pick after draft pick after draft pick at specific positions, is kind of incredible.
Yeah. The fact that it didn't say an Ohio State corner.
That's what I was going to ask. Right? Like, who's the Ohio State corner that we're looking at now, because they have one every year.
I should know this off the top of my head, but I haven't. None of them have graded out for us, unfortunately. So, yeah.
But we've got an Alabama defensive back. We've got a Stanford every year seem to somehow produce a defensive back that gets drafted. Auburn, Clemson. We've, like, every single one of these schools seems to be producing at least one decent draft prospect.
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Blood SEC. Like, you get every single, basically, level of their defenses. Usually at least have one top three round prospect, it seems.
Yeah, like this idea of the SEC being, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else didn't come from nowhere.
Yeah, it's not rooted in, you know, just
entire
bias.
Entire fallacy.
Yeah, it is. There's a reason why. But that's it. That's the cornerback class. I think it's a fairly solid class, to be honest. I think it's better. I'm not going to say necessarily better at the moment than it was last year, but I think the fact that Bryce Hall came back, Christian Fulton came back, if those guys would have left, this past year's class would have been better. I think we'll see a better class in 2020 than we saw in 2019 at the cornerback position. It was somewhat weak. It was just limited skill sets this past season, so I think we'll see a bunch more first rounders in 2020.
Guys coming back in college is always interesting at corner because it is such a high variance position, so it doesn't necessarily mean that these guys are going to either have the same season, a better season. You know, you could easily time it badly, have a bad season the next year, and suddenly your draft stock went to hell.
And that's the thing. It's like four or five bad routes.
Right.
Like, that's, you're all of a sudden you get labeled, you know, guy who bites on double moves.
Like, if you were, if you were making the sort of, if you were just making that decision based on positions, I think corner would be one of the positions that you should, the second you have a good season and your stock looks high, jump.
Although I will say the funny thing about Bryce Hall and why I just remembered it, why I think maybe he returned, is he dropped the most interceptions of anyone else in the country last year.
Right, I've heard that.
By like three. Also, he just had a ton of dropped interceptions. Yeah. And so I think he's thinking, I catch those passes, all of a sudden my number looks better.
Picks next year.
Even if that's not necessarily how NFL evaluators really care, but he had a ton of dropped
picks. I think the thing is, a lot of them do.
He
comes back next year, he gets eight picks.
Yeah.
Suddenly he's a ball hawk stud. He goes in the top five. I think that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And the flip side of it is, like, there are people out there that will ding you for the dropped interceptions. Like, whatever about the guys that just look at the eight interceptions and think, wow, what a playmaker. There are other guys that are going to be like, you drop three, that guy sucks. He can't finish the play. I don't want that guy. I want the guy that's going to make the turnovers.
True.
So, yeah, that probably is a smart move on his basis. But, yeah, cornerback is one spot where the second I had a really good year, I would not be risking not having a good year the next year because, you know, stuff kind of outside of your control, a corner more than most positions can really make you look a lot worse.
Sadly, though, Virginia does not play Clemson this upcoming season unless, obviously, championship game.
Yeah.
But it's terrible. T. Higgins, Justin Ross would have been a great matchup. Unfortunate.
Shame, Michael. All right, that's going to do it for us. I don't know, how long is Steve out of the building for?
I don't even know. I didn't even realize he was going to be out of the building today, so that tells you how much I paid attention.
I knew he was gone today, but I have no idea when he's back. So anyway, at some point, we will hopefully have another podcast later in the week. It may or may not feature Mike. I have no earthly idea how long Steve is on vacation. I do know that he's driving his entire family like to Boston. So
That's probably going to be a while, though.
Yeah. A, it's going to be a while, and B, he's probably not going to be in great spirits when he does get back and gets in the chair.
Yeah.
Because three kids in the back of a minivan driving across the country cannot be fun. So hope you've enjoyed listening to this. It's been Mike Renner and Sam Monson. We shall see you next week.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.